Welcome back. It is the Sunday Puncher podcast. I got Tom here with me. Tom?
Always good to be on. Happy to be on.
I don't even have to ask. You just know. Let me let the people know how I am doing. You doing all right? You guys got snow probably on the East Coast.
Super cold, a lot of indoor activities, which is not the best thing during COVID. So a lot of family stuff at children's museums, trampoline parks, no more parks this time of year. But
have you been on this year?
Have I been on the podcast? This is like the second podcast of the year, period.
So I don't think
the answer is no. And I should ask you that question. Have you been on this year?
Well, when it comes, it depends on what you mean by on. Have I been doing good podcasts? I don't know. You guys have to let Tom know that.
Hey, it's a slow start to the year. Next week's the first big week of the year with that's funny because the heavyweight pay-per-view, I guess, kicked off the year. But yeah, the Thurman pay-per-view is going to be the first big week, and then a lot of momentum after that.
We are just really, really, really close to this all. I mean, the schedule, once it starts, it's like we're getting like little doses right now, but I think it's like full speed ahead come February.
Of course, you're talking about Dazen's big fight season.
Well, depends on what you mean by big, but they announced a lot of fights. I'll give them that.
In terms of quantity, they announced, yes, a very large quantity of fights.
There some fights that I'm interested in simply because I'm a hardcore boxing fan? Yeah. Were there fights that my casual family members and friend boxing fans are going to message me about? I probably won't be getting any of those, for better or worse, actually, given the takes of some of these guys. But anyway.
Yeah, I don't want to derail the podcast right at the start. You can get back on track.
I'll save my rant on my family members for another time. Thanks for listening, guys. This is the second podcast of the year. And here we go. This past weekend on Showtime, the longest reigning world champion in boxing, Mr. Gary Russell Jr. I was watching, I went back and I was looking on the torrent sites because I wanted to download Mikey Garcia versus Orlando Salido in HD. And mostly, I'll be like up front with you guys. I was going to put together a little highlight package of Salido's headbutts and success in that fight and then make a case for him on Twitter that he should be in the Hall of Fame. But I couldn't find it on any of the torrent sites. It's like nobody has decided to upload that one because, you know, Mikey might have dipped from that fight because he couldn't breathe due to one of Salido's headbutts. But there was a clip before. Remember HBO, before the fights, would kind of lay out the landscape and be like, well, this is a title holder, and this is a title holder, and this is a title holder, and then we have these other dudes. And one of the guys that they showed, of the eight guys, was Gary Russell Jr. And do you know what Max Kellerman said about Gary Russell Jr.?
Oh, are you asking me now? I thought that was rhetorical. No, I have no memory of that.
He said Gary Russell Jr. was the best prospect in boxing.
Very interesting.
Now, a lot of time has passed since then, and this past weekend, the longest reigning world champion in boxing took another defeat, this time to Mark Maxayo, who upsets and injured Gary Russell Jr. And, like, you know, he had mentioned, we knew that Gary was dealing with a lot in his personal life. Then he had said something about being injured, and then we actually saw it. I mean, you could visibly see the moment where Gary Russell became a one-armed fighter. He lost a majority decision and, fought half the fight with one functional arm. Gary, though, he believed that he won the fight. Now, let me ask you this question. How did you actually see that fight playing out? Was that a majority decision type of fight? Who'd you see winning that fight?
I wasn't scoring it round to round, but it did actually feel very close. Despite, you know, the crazy circumstance of Russell throwing no punches with his right arm after the injury occurred. I mean, you really just don't see that ever, you know? I mean, I mean, I'm reminded of Lomachenko hurt his arm against the like Thai
Baby
fighter
Pacquiao.
in the fight in Macau in 2014.
I think the dude's like he was Baby Pacquiao.
I don't remember. Yeah, it's funny because he's one of those fighters whose names has changed multiple times. The name on BoxRec is not the name that was used like during the fight. So it sort of broke my brain when I was trying to look it up right now. But usually fighters will still like, even if they have an injury, they'll still like use their arm a little bit. I mean, literally, he did not throw a punch. He didn't do anything except sort of paw with it and try to hit, you know, get range. I mean, at a certain point like that, I mean, you're not gonna win the fight, but I mean, he did everything he could to show that he was, you know, by far the more talented fighter, and continue to land his share of, you know, stinging left hands after that. I mean, his timing was amazing, and it's almost like unbelievable that he was able to be as successful as he was with one arm. I mean, it's like it's kind of nuts, but yeah. I mean, usually, again, if fighters have an injury, they can still like move their arm. I mean, it just the output completely stopped. Like he was worried his arm was going to fall off or something. Really can't remember anything where it was that extreme. I mean, like Gervonta Davis hurt his, you know, hand or wrist or whatever in his last fight against Isaac Cruz. And again, there's the Lomachenko example, but I can't think of any fight like that, especially to make the fight that close. It's pretty crazy. But again, I think he did make it close. I mean, I would make a strong case for that. I mean, I think if you just watch round to round, I mean, he was landing very clean shots against, you know, nothing really that clean coming back. And that's how I score. I always say that by far the most important scoring criteria, and really the basis for all of the other scoring criteria, is just clean punches landed versus clean punches received. And by that measure, I think he did surprisingly well. Certainly didn't win, but did surprisingly well.
So I thought I was gonna cut like, midway through the fight, like I was like, all right, well, Gary came in injured and he lost his fight. But over the course, as the fight played out, I gained a tremendous amount of respect for the performance that Gary Russell put on. I mean, I think you just have to give him that credit. He fought with one arm. Mark Maxayo is not some light punching featherweight. He is big, he can punch, and Gary Russell was able to turn this guy into, I mean, he made him look kind of crude at times. And by no stretch do I believe that Gary Russell won that fight. Let me just put that out there. I do not think Gary won the fight. I didn't have it close at all. I thought it was probably 8-4. There were a couple of, I mean, the final round that Gary turned in was a masterclass. If he would have just did that after the injury, he easily wins this fight. But I do give Gary credit, a lot of credit for a lot of toughness that he showed and the heart that he showed. I was really impressed with that. But I didn't think he won the fight. And if you think that he won the fight, like I can see why people are would say it, but for me, I didn't see it. And here's also one thing I'll throw out is, in the first three rounds where Gary's arm was functional, I thought that the first two rounds, Moxayo was either dead even or won both of the first two rounds. And he looked like he had improved a lot with what we were seeing from him in those two rounds. He was fast. His timing was pretty good. He was disrupting Gary. I thought that he was timing him well. I liked what I saw from Maxayo, but when Gary got injured and switched things up, Maxayo showed that he really wasn't able to make that type of adjustment to capitalize on the fact that Gary only had one hand. I saw a lot of people were really down on Maxayo's performance, and I didn't really see him as like turning in this poor performance against Gary. Did you see that?
I mean, only in the context of the amount of success Russell had after he got hurt. But I would say prior to the injury, it just seemed like Russell was, yeah, Maxayo was doing reasonably well, and Russell was having to deal with the size disadvantage. So, I mean, that's one of the things that makes it so strange that prior to the injury, it actually seemed like Maxayo was doing pretty well on his own terms. And then after that, Russell almost seemed to be doing cartoonishly well, considering he was using one arm. So, I can't fully wrap my head around that, but just to float out, just I don't know, just a, like a weird thought about that. I mean, I almost wondered, you know, for those reasons, it's left me with a weird feeling. It was like after the fight, you said, yeah, Russell said he thought he won, but there was a weird element where, sorry, way of saying it. Boxers in general, like championship level boxers, are hyper competitive people. I mean, that's not like a groundbreaking thing for me to say, but you know, and for that reason, have a hard time accepting losses. You know, Deontay Wilder being like an extreme example of that from the last few years. You know, and that's what you want to see. You want to see that hyper competitive spirit. It almost felt like because of the injury, it was like for the sake of his ego, an excusable loss, if that makes sense. I know that might sound weird, but it seemed like after the fight, he was like sort of okay with the outcome because of how it occurred. Which again is one of those weird things. Like he didn't throw his arm at all. Like it wasn't like his arm was paralyzed. I mean, you know, I mean that's not how those injuries work for one, but I mean, like, you know, he was able to like put his right hand out to like extend it, but literally didn't use it at all. I mean, you'll see frequently with fighters who have an injury, they'll at least like try to sort of mask it by using their hand a little bit, but they won't favor it. I mean, like I would describe like Gervonta's last fight as looking that way. It literally just stopped. You know, he was like, okay, I'm going to use my arm as a range fighter and sort of paw with it, but I literally will not throw a punch. And I think again, like CompuBox did not record a single punch thrown from that side from the rest of the fight. So yeah, I don't know. Again, it was kind of a weird thing. I don't want to psychoanalyze him too much, but it did almost feel like at that point he was accepting he was going to lose and sort of, I don't know, get a moral victory almost. Like,
Well,
I'm
we
going to do
see
as well
that.
as I can with one arm.
We see that a lot, though, in boxing, where guys, you could tell that they're trying, but they're trying to survive the fight, and to reach the 12th round is the victory for them. I don't know that we saw that specifically from Gary. I feel like he just understood that, like almost like he immediately was able to justify it to himself. That's like, well, I had one arm. So if I don't get this decision in a fight that I box well in, like it's 'cause I didn't have one, I had one arm only. I feel like maybe that's what we saw. Switching back to Magzayo though, what do you think is the most interesting next fight for him?
I think a rematch is still, I mean, it's funny, like, yeah, I mean, I think the rematch is probably the biggest money fight. I don't think he'll do it. I mean, it's such a weird outcome for him because I think almost anyone who watched that fight would say that Russell was clearly the better fighter and lost because of the injury. Like, as you were saying, I mean, Magzayo was doing pretty well before that happened, but that's the overwhelming impression that's left by it. So it's sort of a weird thing. I know like Magzayo and his supporters are very happy just to get that title for the Philippines. I mean, but it's I don't know. I mean, do you feel, I mean, this isn't what you asked, but I mean, do you feel like he comes out of the fight with momentum at all?
That's a great question. I think no. I think he had momentum. I think it was a third or fourth round. It wasn't looking too good for him. It looked like Gary was about to take the fight over, and then Gary injures himself, which that alone, I think, puts a damper on the win, and it qualifies it in a way where it's like, yeah, Moxayo beat Gary, but Gary also fought with one arm. So it's not like the full thing where, like, for instance, Ugas beating Manny Pacquiao, where Pacquiao wasn't injured in that fight. Ugas actually was supposed to be the one who was injured, if you believe the bicep thing. And Ugas is the one that got the momentum coming out of that, which is, you know, we didn't see in this situation.
Yeah. So anyway, who do I want to see him fight next? I'm not going to give a long answer to that. I mean, there's probably the biggest name for him would be Leo Santa Cruz, if Leo Santa Cruz wants to come down to 126. And I have to say, for Santa Cruz, he probably couldn't ask for a better opportunity than this. I mean, if he said he still wants to fight at featherweight and he wants a chance at a title, I mean, Magsayo looks very beatable. It's not necessarily the biggest money fight, which I think is the problem, because at this point in Santa Cruz's career, he probably just wants big money. So that's probably difficult. But I mean, out of any of those guys in the PBC sphere, whoever owns that belt, and especially if Leo Santa Cruz retains through boxing politics, the WBA belt. I mean, those are going to be the guys that are desired. So like Ray Vargas is going to want to fight one of those guys. Brandon Figueroa, assuming he goes up to 126, is going to want to fight one of those guys. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, in terms of PBC's 126 pound guys, he's in a desirable position because he has a belt and he looks vulnerable. Not as a huge draw necessarily, but he has a belt and he looks reasonably vulnerable. So people will want to fight him.
So here's my question. Magsayo just gets his win over Gary Russell. Let's assume that Gary's going to be on the shelf for several months because he's going to have surgery to repair his shoulder, which he should. But that's probably going to put him out of the ring for about a year, which I'm sure all of you guys are going to groan about. But in the meantime, that means that Gary's not going to enforce a rematch. So what direction do you go with Magsayo? And if we just kind of zoom out and think of it from a sort of promotional perspective in the direction of Magsayo's career, is the right move to throw him into like the next Gary level opponent? Well, I don't think anybody at 126 is at Gary's level, but really another world champion caliber fighter. Is that the move for Magsayo, or do you see a future with him where you may want to build him a little bit and you may want to give him that voluntary title defense where it's allow him to win? Allow him to look explosive and really prop himself up as one of the major players in the division. And if so, what is the fight for him in that situation?
Boy, I don't see it that way at all, and I'll just I he, Magsayo to me looks like a fighter who could lose any fight. In it's like another when we're talking about injuries. Another example I think of, this is maybe unfair to Magsayo, but is Saddam Ali getting the victory over Cotto? Where I mean, I said after the fight, and I think you agreed, and it was not an unpopular sentiment that basically anyone who Ali fights after that is probably going to knock him out. That anyone in the top 10 at 154 could knock him out. He got, fought Jaime Munguia, and Munguia, destroyed him. We saw how that happened. I don't think this is as extreme as that, but I mean, I think Magsayo is very vulnerable. I mean, he was losing his fight against Julio Seja before he got the knockout. And granted, he got the knockout, but yeah, I'll say again. I mean, he looks very, very vulnerable. I think in every fight, from here forward, he's going to take the fight which offers the most money. I don't think this is a thing where people are going to pretend that he's like a future superstar. I mean, he's 26. He's in his physical prime. It's not like he's 22 or something. And there's room to build him up more. Really, in terms of being a draw or more than that in his ability as a fighter. So, as I said, I mean, I think if Leo Santa Cruz is interested, I couldn't imagine Magsayo turning that fight down. I mean, I think both of them have their own vulnerabilities, and I think that's a big opportunity for Leo Santa Cruz if he wants to come down to the division. I mean, I don't want to say that Santa Cruz was ducking Gary Russell, but it seemed like he never wanted that fight. So he has a way to get that belt without having to fight Gary Russell Jr.
Wow.
That to me is a pretty appealing road back into relevance for Santa Cruz after the layoff and his first loss to Gervonta Davis.
Now, I think that this fight is not likely to happen, and I think that it's more likely, Tom, you were right about the direction of Magsayo's career than me. But I would not object to a fight with Eduardo Ramirez.
I mean, that would be a fantastic fight fans fight for
Yeah, I
sure.
think nobody walks away from that fight unhappy, except for whoever gets knocked out, because somebody will get knocked out in that fight. Two big punching featherweights who are vulnerable defensively. I think most likely the Ray Vargas fight's going to happen because of the favorable position he was in the WBC, and given he was a WBC champion that never lost at 122. It's probably the fight that's going to happen. It's also the fight that I'm least interested in terms of the excitement, unless Magsayo can figure out how to break Vargas down. And we've seen guys get to Vargas before, so it's not like it's an unfathomable idea. But for now, I would really prefer to see Eduardo Ramirez. I'm going to hold off on throwing Leo Santa Cruz's name out there, and I know a lot of people are throwing that name out as potential for Magsayo. I just am not, because I don't know what Leo's going to look like after Tank knocked him out. So I got to wait and see for that one.
Well, I mean, that's the thing with Santa Cruz. I mean, what is his, from here to when he retires, what are his chances to make money? You know, if he does that fight and they're able to make a WBA, WBC unification fight, I really don't think he has many better options than that. I mean, is he going to fight Chris Colbert? I mean, I don't think so.
Well, I also think he should be at 126. I think.
Well,
Actually,
that's
no,
what I mean. I mean,
Colbert ain't punching real hard. Maybe it
well,
don't
but
matter.
again, that's my, well, I think it's actually more likely Colbert would outbox him. That's what
Well,
I'm
I
saying.
do think
Just I
that,
think that's a
but.
horrible fight for Leo Santa Cruz that I don't see him taking. So if he doesn't have appealing options at 130 and he's at 126, anyway, I don't need to,
Actually,
I've
I
said my
take that
piece. I
back.
can just
If
keep saying
Leo
myself.
is the same Leo before the tank fight, I don't think that Colbert wins that fight as easily as some people do, and I think you're included in that. But we'll save that debate for another day.
Yeah.
Is this the end for Gary Russell Jr.?
I don't think so. I think he'll have at least one more fight after his injury. I mean, well, after his recovery, we'll see how that does. But I mean, we didn't really touch on that. But I mean, I know you guys covered it during the preview. But I mean, he faced an enormous amount of turmoil. I mean, this is one of those things, like, not exactly the same circumstance as the Teofimo thing. But I think after the Teofimo fight, you know, we, and I'll say I personally, I mean, said like he has a road back. You know, this was about a huge amount of, you know, outside of the ring stuff weighed in on this fight. And, you know, granted, Gary Russell is at a different stage of his career in terms of age and having to deal with this injury, but this is a lot for him to have to deal with. So let's see, you know, what happens when, you know, because look, if he hadn't been out of the ring for 2 years and he was facing an injury like this, maybe he'd say, okay, let me recover. But at this point, if he didn't go ahead with this fight date, that could have been the end of his career. So, yeah, I think he definitely has a road back after this. And to circle back a little bit on what I was saying before, if you have Colbert now has a title at 130, builds his name up a little bit. If Leo Santa Cruz is back in the picture in one way or another, especially if Leo Santa Cruz is in the picture, unifying against Magsayo, you get a winner to that fight. Brandon Figueroa, if he comes up from 122, his last fight did very, very good ratings for Showtime. The division would, even if Gary Russell Jr., say, comes back in a year, the climate for him and the possible fights for him are going to be pretty good. You know, it's not like this is a dead division for him.
No, I think the division is starting to heat up a little bit, if anything. Yeah, I think, look, if Gary does not come back, it'll be because Gary knows that he can't go. Gary doesn't strike me as the type of guy that's gonna be out here trying to fight forever. Give it, like, just look at the fact that he fights once a year. That should tell you everything you know about what Gary thinks about boxing and all that. But I don't think this is the end. I think this shoulder injury is going to get resolved, and this dude is gonna come back and take his title back. That's my prediction for how this ends. And I also, if Gary can come back as the same guy we saw in the third round, I also don't really think that there's anybody at 126 that would be a favorite over him.
Yeah, I mean, still, I mean, that was the funny thing coming into this fight, because how many fighters coming off a 2 year layoff, you know, they say they have an injury, their trainer, who's their father, is facing incredible like health problems. I mean, how many fighters would still be as heavy of a favorite as he was coming into this fight? I mean, it really just speaks to his standing in the sport that he was viewed that highly coming into the fight. You know, and you saw why over the course. I mean, just it's not normal for a fighter to be able to hold their own with one arm. I mean, completely one armed. You know, not like having trouble with one arm, literally not able to use it. I mean, you know, he showed so much there. I mean, it's reminiscent of Gervonta Davis in the 12th round against Isaac Cruz, where, you know, he was able to, you know, using a style that really wasn't purely his style, and with one hand, just completely control the round just through pure talent. You know, that's really unusual.
All right, on to the undercard. Subriel Matias got the win back against Petros Onanian in a very brutal fight. This one was almost encroaching on the uncomfortable level for me. What do you think the ceiling is for Matias, with Matias stopping Onanian? Well, actually, the doctor stopped Onanian after like the eighth or ninth round, and was like, "Yeah, this dude can't track." Like, his eyes aren't tracking my finger, so we got to stop this one. So, what do you think this ceiling is for Matias at 140?
Yeah, I mean that's sort of the question I wanted to answer last, in terms of what his ceiling is. But yeah, I mean that's a frustrating question to face first. I think he is going to end up getting beaten by someone. He has so many technical flaws, but I mean he's in an interesting position. It's sort of reminiscent of Provodnikov at a certain point, or Lucas Matisse at a certain point in his career, where they weren't undefeated, but they had just this, this aura around their offense that just that they would be dangerous in a hard fight for absolutely anyone. And there's this special aura over Matias. I mean, just because of the unfortunate, the tragic circumstance of killing Maxim Dadashev in the ring. And
He
just the
didn't
way
kill him in
all
the
this.
ring. He died after.
Well,
Just.
but from injuries sustained, and but I don't know. That seems kind of pedantic, unnecessarily
No,
pedantic.
it is not, because there's a big difference between this guy died as a result of the injury suffered versus, yeah, this dude was lifeless in the ring.
I mean,
Like,
okay. I mean,
we did not watch
that's
this.
not really how ring deaths work. I mean, again, this is kind of a pedantic point, but I mean, fighters suffer brain injuries and then die, hours or days
Yeah,
later.
but
I mean,
we didn't have to see it.
well, we saw a lot on that ESPN broadcast. That
We
was
definitely did.
not very tastefully presented by them at the time, and that's why that has never been shown again. They took it off ESPN Plus the replay immediately.
Do you have it downloaded?
I may or may not. We can talk. I don't need to. Yes, but
This snuff film watching individual here.
anyway, yeah. I mean, but there's this just like crazy. I mean, all of his fight. I mean, he has the. This is again. This is not your question, but I'm just going to go off on my little thing first here. But I mean, Subriel Matias has the rare combination of like tremendous punching power, a pressure fighting style, but he doesn't have the polish, timing, and accuracy to land like knockout punches. So, like, whereas another fighter, like you think of Errol Spence coming up, he's beating up a fighter like Leonard Bundu, but he lands a shot that knocks Bundu unconscious in like the fifth round or something, and the fight's over. Matias doesn't have the polish to set up those shots, so instead it's just this like unrelenting beating, and just without fail it creates this climate where it's like, even besides that, he already I'm gonna go I'm doing it because he already killed another fighter in the ring. There's just like, even if that hadn't been the case, it's just all of his fights have that feel about them. I mean, anyone who's watched a lot of boxing know those types of fights where like one fighter is absolutely beating up the opponent, but they're getting hit just enough that the ref doesn't stop it. And it's just like all of his fights feel like those fights where like his opponents could be suffering like life-altering injuries, if not death, life-altering injuries, where it's just these just prolonged beatings. And you saw and hear that. I mean, the way that his opponent looked in the corner before the stoppage. I mean, it just,
It was pretty bad.
mentally and physically defeated, just bleeding, just swollen and bleeding all over the, I mean, just absolutely nuts. So
Even the swelling didn't, like, that's it's it was almost like we don't even see that swelling normally. It was like he was swollen in places. It's like usually guys don't get swollen there.
yeah, and I mean the other stuff around him. I mean, like he has been shot 3 times, has a bullet in his shoulder, has done prison stints in Puerto Rico and federal prison in the United States. I mean, there's something very different about him. And he's one of those guys where every time he fights, the momentum is really building. He's still a little bit under the radar, and this was a loss that he had to avenge. But we'll see. I mean, again, like I remember that, I think two close examples are Lucas Matisse and Ruslan Provodnikov. I think yeah, I mean, where like they sort of went from being, hey, these are some sort of brawlers, aren't they kind of fun, to just there being like huge heat behind them. But anyway, response to that, or to the direct question about his ceiling.
Well, I think this is gonna catch up with him at some point in terms of talking about a ceiling, but what you said about the fighters who could build towards like the knockout, It almost feels like Matias knows he's building towards something, but doesn't know what it is. And so the way his fights play out, it's just building and building and building. And then ultimately, the fight, his opponents usually just crack. And he doesn't get him with that satisfying knockout shot. Like, I mean, the knockdown that he scored on Ananian was really cool. He caught him at the right time. But to me, that did not look like a fight, or not a fight, a shot that he was planning to land. It was just he's letting his hands go, and he finally caught him. And so, I mean, his ceiling is that when he gets in the ring with the guy that can set things up and ultimately lay the traps for this guy, does his chin hold up? And can he get to them before they get to him? Because when it comes to a slugging match, if you don't come in with extreme, like, elite power and elite stamina, there's no way you're going to beat Matias at this game. Unless you're a sharpshooter, or unless you can just counterpunch him all night, which I think that there are guys at 140 who I'd be very confident could do that. But anyone else that isn't at that level, like, I mean, Matias is going to be trouble for. And then the other thing about it is, like, let's say you just kind of have one bad round. With the activity he has, the power that he's shown, I mean, it could throw your whole game plan off the rails really quickly. And we don't really see that too often in boxing, where a guy is just bringing this sort of violence into these fights. Where do you go with him, though? Like, what do you
Well,
think?
yeah, just to respond directly to the thing that you were saying. I mean, there are interesting examples of this, like where you have like a tough brawler who gets hit and he fights a top guy and they think, oh, you know, I can land those sharp shots and take him out. But you know, that can lead to like what happened with Timothy Bradley against Ruslan Provodnikov, where, you know, the maybe higher profile guy thinks, oh, you know, he's hittable. He's not going to be able to come in on me, and then, you know, the fight becomes like a total war. So I mean, it'll be interesting. You said where would I go with him?
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because the PBC has like an interesting mix of guys at 140, but it's mostly a young division. You know, they have Richardson Hitchens, Gary Antoine Russell, very notably, and also I'm trying to think of the name of the guy who fought on Fox recently. But they don't really have any like superstars at 140. They're really much more weighted towards 135 and 147. So I mean, you know, you have guys like Gervonta Davis who maybe could move up eventually, or like Rayo Valenzuela and Michelle Rivera, where probably like most of their careers will take place at 140, just because they look like they're due to outgrow 135 sooner than later. But I think in the very short term, a lot of people are talking about potentially doing Richardson Hitchens or Gary Antoine Russell against Matias. And that'll be really interesting because, I mean, that's where I said I wanted to answer this last. Like, he's the type of guy where you can almost imagine those higher profile fighters saying, like, he does not have the skills. I can get through to him. I can take him out. And I don't know. You know, again, it gets to like the Timothy Bradley example. You could also very much imagine either of those fighters being like too young and not able to physically hang in there with him and have the fight kind of backfire and become Matias's type of fight, which, you know, would make either of those fights really appealing because, you know, you could definitely see those fights going either way. I mean, in my mind, I mean, I'm sort of like spoiling the script here, but I mean, the thing I keep thinking of is the Gary Antoine Russell against Matias, and I don't say that for Matias. I mean, I feel like there's a play here where that could become a star-making performance for Gary Antoine Russell, where Matias looks so deadly, and it looks like such a high-risk fight, but Antoine Russell could go in there and smoke him.
Yeah, I think if that's the long-term play, you know, it is a smart move for Gary Antoine Russell. I think that Matias would beat Richardson Hitchens. So I
Well,
like that
that's
matchup.
partly why I think we might see that fight because, it's the right way of saying this. Steven Espinoza has become very aggressive in how he's spending his money. You kind of get that sense, and you see the difference between what's on Fox and what's on Showtime. I mean, one, they're okay with programming smaller fighters. There are some differences there, but he has his favorites. Like Jerron Ennis is always going to get a fight date. But Richardson Hitchens is someone who's had some mediocre performances, and then basically Showtime didn't want to broadcast him. He got pushed off of one broadcast to an untelevised undercard. He left that card with an injury, which may or may not have actually happened, and then his next fight was on FS1. So, if he wants to get back on Showtime, Espinosa's probably going to say, "Okay, great. You have to be match tough, or how do you feel about the Subriel Matias fight?" So, we'll find out. If there's anyone who's listening to this, if you know, I don't know if there's any sanctioning body stuff happening with Matias, like if he's working his way up a sanctioning body, but I could definitely see either Gary Antoine Russell or, I mean, it's like on one hand, those fights seem unrealistic, but I actually think we could see either of those fights.
Well, given the sanctioning bodies, if Josh Taylor moves up, all those titles become vacant, and we could see like a Matias versus some random dude for a title,
Yeah, I don't
which.
want to. Yeah, I the I don't want to draw this out too much. We should move on with the schedule here, but. I don't. The more I think about it, the less likely I think it is Josh Taylor moves up. It just doesn't, unless he's physically outgrowing the weight class, it just makes absolutely no sense to me. If he moves up, he'll lose all the belts and have, while Spence and Crawford are still there at 147, and with Crawford burning his bridge with Top Rank, and that pretty much removes the possibility of doing the Taylor fight. So, I really can't imagine why Taylor would move up. So, I think he's going to sit on those belts for as long as he can. I mean, he could lose some of them to mandatories, but I don't think that's as likely as other people.
All right, and then in the opener, King Tug got a draw against Sakaria Lucas. Could you explain for anyone who didn't watch the fight what the controversy was? Because there was quite a few people upset about this fight on social media.
I mean, I don't think there's one. I'd be fine if we didn't talk about this fight at all, because
This is
it
all we're
was,
going to talk about.
yeah, it
Explain
was
and
sort
then
of
move on.
transparently just a like a replacement opponent fight, just so if one of the main event guys got injured, they could throw King Tug in there. But I mean, it was a close fight, and there was a knockdown, but the knockdown was ruled a slip, and that would have changed the outcome of the official scoring. So yeah, it was a bad call. The ref, I can't imagine why he agreed to do an interview, but they put him on camera and showed video highlight footage, and he didn't want to admit that he made a mistake. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you have anything more to say about it than that? I mean, I just,
Nope.
like I said, I just don't really want to talk about this fight.
Nope, that's it. All right, moving on. So it was falsely reported by Gareth Davies that Anthony Joshua will step aside to make the Fury versus Usyk fight happen. Now, I say it was falsely reported because this article was hidden behind a paywall. And if you actually read it, presents no new information. And the part about the step aside was speculative, meaning he could step aside, not that he will. So, no hard information. This is bad reporting all the way around. You should not be putting a headline like that on something where you're inferring and deducing. That's just not how this all works. But it does beg this question: should Anthony Joshua step aside? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's funny that you describe it as like bad reporting, because I think they got exactly the outcome that they wanted. And we saw this over and over again with Wilder related to the Fury thing, that people trying to spread rumors either just for clickbait or for sort of people linked to Fury's camp just for nefarious reasons, trying to spread rumors that Wilder was going to take step aside money. even though he was fighting a prolonged lawsuit to try to get the rematch clause enforced. I don't know. I'd asked about this in the chat about, how often do these step aside things actually happen? And you had mentioned there was a very high profile one that had happened, but one, I don't think it's realistic, because who's going to pay that much money? It just doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, what is the value for Usyk there? I mean, he realistically must think that he has a high chance of winning the rematch. So, it just, again, like, where is that money coming from? So there are like I could go on and on, but this isn't going to be that type of podcast episode about why a big step aside thing does not make sense. And for him, I don't know. I mean, I don't. He already has the loss. Even if he repeats the loss, I think his reputation will be more hurt if he declines to take the rematch. You know, if you look at Wilder, I think his fans appreciate that he had the will to try to beat Fury again. And, you know, he scored those knockdowns in the fight and I think left with his dignity intact in that sense. I don't really see a reason for AJ to step away. I don't think he has a better option. And I don't think the money or the business apparatus is in place to pay him that money that's been discussed. So, I don't know. I think it's a little silly. As you said, it was kind of a clickbait article, but I guess it's a slow week and we need something to talk about. So, well, what do you have to say about it?
I think that Anthony Joshua should step aside. No, I'm kidding. One, I really hope Joshua doesn't step aside. As a fan of Anthony Joshua, you can't step aside here. You just can't. But I see the argument for it. And I think I made this argument about Wilder potentially stepping aside. Now, I'm going to poke a hole in it. And as I say that, you should also be able to spot why this is a dumb idea. But the idea for Joshua stepping aside is that, one, he's the biggest star of the three fighters in this little dance here. He's a bigger star than Tyson Fury. He's a bigger star than Alexander Usyk, who really nobody knows outside of the hardcore fan who's listening to this podcast and people like you. Anthony Joshua is the big star, and belts or no belts, the fight with him is more lucrative for both of these guys than it is fighting each other. So that's one. Joshua is going to switch trainers. He needs to go back to the lab and do some work on himself and really evolve as a fighter in order for him to A, be competitive in a rematch with Tyson or with Usyk, or to prepare himself to fight Fury. Okay? This time and $15 million, which is what they are throwing out as a number that they would need to hit in order to get Joshua to step aside, seems like a good idea. Okay? Now, what is the argument against that? It's very simple. What happens if Fury and Usyk have a close fight? See, now you run into an issue where you have to do a rematch there. And Joshua's rematch with Usyk, or really the agreement to fight the winner, comes into a bit of a disaster because let's assume they need to do a rematch. Joshua then has to wait for that to take place. These things take a while, could be 6 months. Add 6 months onto the 6 months is probably going to take for this fight to happen. And now we're looking at Joshua being out of the ring for almost 2 years, which is not a good scenario for Joshua. We've seen with Joshua that at this point, this guy, unless he, I mean, the level of opponent that he requires is also going to be a dangerous opponent for him, given where he's at in his career, having suffered two losses, both of them in both of the losses that Joshua suffered, he's really looked bad in those fights. And so you don't really want to take that risk with Joshua and flush all of this down the drain. So you got to look at this like you're at this point in your career where you just can't let it go by you. And so I don't think he should step aside here. He's got to get back in the ring with Usyk and really exhaust this route because this is his last shot to be in the conversation for the undisputed title. You got to go back and beat Usyk and then make the Fury fight happen. Otherwise, you're going to be doing Joshua Ruiz 3.
Well, I mean, he has other. I mean, there's still a huge fight with Wilder. I think everyone, you know, keeps talking about how much they want that fight. But yeah, he just doesn't have a better option than fighting for his belts. There's really nothing else that needs to be said about that.
Okay. So Showtime announced their next card. Main event, someone who you speak fondly of, Chris Colbert against Roger Gutierrez. The undercard, Gary Antoine Russell versus Victor Postol, and Jermon Ancajas versus Fernando Martinez. What sticks out to you about this card?
Just solid card overall. I really don't care about the Jerwin fight, so I'm not even going to mention that. But yeah, just to go through, I mean, Chris Colbert, this is a fantastic opportunity for him. he already had a version of the WBA belt, but you know, no one really took that seriously. This is a chance for him to really legitimize himself as title holder, the WBA title holder. Top Rank is poised, and we'll get to that in a bit when we get to the preview. But they're poised to really, if you look at Top Rank's roster, it looks like they're going to put a big focus on 130 over the next 2 or 3 years. So Colbert will be in that division with a legitimate title if he gets out of here with a win. And also for him, a guy who doesn't have the most punching power, he's in with an opponent where he could really, this could be a statement-making performance for him. So as a fan of him, I've been looking for him to get a fight that could really put him on the map. And I think this is a great opportunity for him. Very excited about it. Do you have anything to say about the main event, or should I go through the undercard first?
The main event, I think, is an interesting fight. I'm not as sold on Colbert as a lot of people. So I think that this fight could potentially be more competitive than we realize. But I mean, I'm not that sold on Colbert, but I also recognize that this guy's pretty damn good. Okay, so when I say I'm not sold, I mean, like, I don't think Colbert is like pound for pound bound. He could be, but I don't really see it like that at this point. But I think he should beat Gutierrez, and I think it should be an interesting style clash. The fight that really sticks out to me is the Gary Antoine versus Victor Postol fight. And mostly because when I was looking at Gary Antoine, when Steven Espinoza was on that, he did the interview on the PBC podcast, and they asked him about like the future of Showtime and what was in the plans for 2022. He mentioned Gary Antoine like 5 times. And so clearly he's in his mind, and we can expect something from Gary Antoine. And the one fight I didn't see coming was Victor Postol. This is brilliant matchmaking on their behalf, because I, someone who was down on Victor Postol, but he came out and he turned in a pretty respectable performance against Jose Ramirez. Gary Antoine, this is a huge step in competition for him. Now, you may think, well, Victor Postol, you know, he's 38 years old or whatever. It's like, yeah, but Gary Antoine ain't really fighting anybody out here, okay? Victor Postol represents a pretty good measuring stick for where Gary Antoine is. And, you know, we got to remember, Postol's never been stopped. He's been dropped, but never been stopped. And he's always shown a good account of himself, from his fight with Terrence Crawford all the way to Jose Ramirez. The dude does some things well, and one of them is survive. So it is a great question in terms of where is Gary Russell in his development at this point. I'm sure you love this fight too.
Oh yeah, I can't wait for this fight. Yeah, I mean, I think all of us collectively in the chat, shout out Sunday Puncher, Patreon, Discord, were really impressed with that match when it was made. Postol's one of those guys where it's like, I don't even say like high level gatekeeper, but a name in the division that still means a lot. And like when a prospect, you know, I think of Virgil Ortiz fighting Mean Machine. You know, that it's similar feel to that, where it's like still a relevant name. It's, you know, where, oh, this, if he can beat Postol impressively, Gary Antoine will instantly go from being you know, very appealing prospect, but one who really doesn't have any significant wins, to at that point he could pretty realistically be in the top 10 pretty instantly. You know, if he can beat Postol convincingly, I think people would start to say he might be a favorite over guys like Jose Ramirez or Jose Zepeda, who, you know, have pretty significant weaknesses at this point in their career. So it's pretty, you know, it's but it's also, sort of what I was saying, it, I mean, it could backfire. I mean, Postol's a guy who has definitely fights to the level of his competition. He's fought lower level guys and looked very bad. But then he's also given very hard fights to everyone that he's been in with, except really Terrence Crawford. I mean, he won maybe 2 rounds in that fight, and then Crawford, you know, for the most part, just outboxed him at distance, knocked him down twice, but gave a lot of trouble to Jose Ramirez very arguably beat Jose Ramirez and also gave a hard fight to Josh Taylor. I mean, this is a boxing Twitter throwback from the last few years, but do you remember what the take was after that fight? There's a very specific take after Josh Taylor fought Victor Postol.
That Victor Postol had been robbed.
No, it was that there was a picture of Josh Taylor where one of his eyes looked out of focus. And people on boxing Twitter were saying that was a sign of a brain bleed
What
and
the
that
fuck,
Josh Taylor
Tom,
was going to
are you
have to
making up
retire.
right here? Are you
That was like,
serious?
that was the biggest thing on boxing Twitter for the 24 hours when that happened. There was a picture of Josh Taylor where one of his eyes looked like it was like glazed over and looking in the wrong direction. And people were saying that he had brain damage and he was going to have to retire. I can't believe you don't remember that. I thought I'd given you just enough information to get what I was talking about. Well, anyone can check in the chat if they can remember that or if they can find that tweet. But yeah, anyway, so great fight. And to the point we're saying, I mean, it's a huge step up. I mean, just to talk about a little bit of Gary Antoine and his mindset. I mean, he had said going in looking at interviews from the last few years that basically he is a fighter who feels, I'm sort of paraphrasing here, but you know, he does his learning in the gym. He wasn't a guy who felt like he needed to fight a million fights coming up. I mean, from last year onward, he said basically just, I'm looking for only the fights that are really going to make a difference. And, you know, if you look, I mean, he basically fought absolutely no one, and then got that Giovanni Santiago fight, which, you know, he looked very good and Santiago just fought Broner, but really, how much does that even mean? So, I mean, this is a monumental step up, though. And we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, credit to him. I mean, he's showing a lot of confidence for taking this fight. It's a huge opportunity. I mean, there's a chance Postol could embarrass him. I mean, it's such a big step up. But I don't think anyone thinks that. I mean, I think everyone who's around the sport really views him very highly. For the PBC for the last number of years, like their PR people back when he was like 4-0, like he was the one they were going around press row. You know, when it's that level of fight, I mean, I'm sure Angelo, you know what I mean from seeing all those like early fights frequently that aren't even televised. Just it's hard to even tell what the ability level is because like the A side is just like embarrassing the opponent so heavily. But that he was the guy they were saying, no, he's the guy. You know, if you have, you know, 4-0 prospects on a prelim, you know, it's like he's the guy to watch. And he definitely looked like that in his last fight. And this is really I mean, yeah, I mean, just how great of a chance is this for him? But there are so many ways it could go wrong. I mean, it could look boring. I mean, even if he wins, I mean, it could look like if it looks like the Jose Ramirez fight, that's not going to be the type of performance that he wants. But if he can get any version of a stoppage, I mean, that'll just be sensational for his career. And as we said, you know, just in the immediate horizon, if they want two young undefeated guys, they have the Richardson Hitchens fight. If he wants to take the big test against Subriel Matias, that's right there. I mean, you would almost think that if he can stop Victor Postol, you would have to think he would be the favorite going into the Subriel Matias fight. I mean, you know, what an appealing. I mean, that would be a Showtime main event, I think. I mean, that would be great or a pay-per-view co-main. I mean, just a fantastic fight. So, yeah, I can't wait. But there's a lot of ways it could go wrong too.
Coming up this week, we have Robson Conceição and Xavier Martinez in what I think is a really interesting fight. I don't think it's going to be very thrilling, okay? So don't say that I said this was going to be entertaining and then it's not, and then you'd be mad at me. But I am really interested in it. I think these are two players at 130, and there's a lot of implications here for the future of like who's going to fight who going forward. But my question to you, and I think that this is the more interesting question heading into this fight, is like, was Conceição's performance against Oscar Valdez, where he damn near won that fight, was that because Conceição is actually good, or was it just an off night for Oscar Valdez?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the main question. I mean, generally speaking in boxing, I would say that you see a mean reversion. You know, if fighters have shown themselves to be at one level, shown themselves to have a lot of problems, you know, if they have one really good performance, usually they're going to go back to the fighter that you expect. And Conceição has just looked so consistently marginal over the course of his career. And Oscar Valdez is a guy who also is prone to having nights off. So, you know, with the Oscar Valdez fight, he was going into it with all of the, drama related to his positive PED test, had a lot of problems making weight. I mean, for anyone who remembers, he weighed in like 3 times in 1 minute, and then an official just said, I guess, like, okay, you can go ahead. So, a lot of weirdness there. So I really can't get the bad Kansei Sao performances out of my mind. And I think that's why Xavier Martinez took the fight. He's a guy who's shown his flaws too, but I think he feels like for his career, he's not going to get a better opportunity than this, because if he can win, he doesn't even, any version of a win here, and he's going to get a title shot. Good opportunity for Xavier Martinez. This is one which I think, as you said, isn't necessarily going to look good. I think the more interesting follow-up is about how this fits into Top Rank's 130-pound picture, and how, increasingly important that division is going to be for their company over the next few years. But do you have any comments about the matchup itself, or do you want to get into the broader landscape?
No, I just I don't know. I've seen Conseil definitely have performances where I'm like, oh, okay, this is not translating very well. And then Valdez came in and didn't perform well, so there really are a lot of question marks. I don't think Xavier Martinez is. I thought that he was going to be a B player in the whatever division he wound up in. I've always felt that way, and especially after seeing the Burgos fight, where Martinez just really didn't make himself look special in a fight where, well, in a fight with an opponent that many others have looked very good against. So, yeah. So what's interesting is, like, okay, if Conseil wins, he can definitely get a rematch with Valdez. Well, actually, you know what? This got less interesting to me with the rumor of Valdez and Shakur, because now that those two guys are fighting each other, like, the winner here gets the loser of that fight at some point, and the winner is most likely going to 135, is how I see this playing out.
Boy, I did not follow that at all. You think the winner of this fight is going to 135?
No. The winner of Valdez and
Oh, it's going
Shakur.
to go to 135 just because 135 is the money division.
Yeah, but also I think it's time for certainly for Shakur. I think he's won a very big lightweight or super featherweight. But
I've
two.
heard you say that before. I'm going to cut you off. He really isn't, though. I feel like they always talked about how big he was when he fought at like 126, but he's only like 5'6". He's
No.
really not. He has. I mean, it's funny to me. He has a fr like certain fighters look taller or shorter on TV than they are just because of their frame. He has kind of a lanky frame, but he's not actually very tall. I mean, Boxrec lists him as 5'7", 68-inch reach, and I would just say from seeing him in person, I mean, to me, he looks physically like a featherweight.
I'm pretty sure that he's bigger than 5'7".
Well, like I said, that's just what's listed on
In
Boxrec,
the
but
Olympics, he was 5'8". I don't think you go down, you go up. And I think that the Olympic measurements are probably a little more accurate than whatever the fuck ESPN and Top Rank are doing. So I think he's a guy that's gonna be able to move up, and like I think Shakur's maybe even eventually gonna get to 147 in his career. If Mikey could do it, he certainly can. So I think he's most likely gonna go to 135, and I think that there are money fights for him there. Valdez, if he wins the fight, I could also see going to 135. Maybe we could get the long-awaited match between him and Lomachenko that's been brewing since 2012. But the loser most likely is the guy who's going to wind up getting their win back, getting a win, and then facing the winner of this fight here, Conseil and Martinez.
I'm going to talk about this in a slightly different way. So the main thing to that I see at so this is the only thing that I'm going to go on a little bit of a jag about, and then I think we'll be pretty much done here. We've been snappy enough for the rest of the podcast. I think I've earned this a little bit. So big thing happening at Top Rank. Terence Crawford, who was one of their biggest draws, really one of their only draws, left, and then sues the company for racial discrimination. Essentially, that's not, as you we've you've talked about it in the podcast a number of times, Wilson, on both on Patreon and the normal pod. That's not exactly what happened, but you know, he's got this lawsuit against Top Rank. If you there's something that I noticed recently. If you go to Top Rank's website and you click on like their fighters tab and it goes through their champions, they only have 10 fighters in their entire company who hold any version of a championship. And if you just look at their ethnicities, you know, if Tyson Fury white, Michaela Mayer white, and you know, a woman, not even in the male sport, Shakur Stevens black, Joe Smith Jr. white, Emmanuel Navarrete from Mexico, now you in a way who's really not even with Top Rank. I mean, it's a very tenuous relationship. His last fight was in Japan and his next fight is supposed to be in Japan as well. So Top Rank didn't even broadcast the last fight in the US. So it just, you know, so anyway, their relationship with him is tenuous, but he's certainly not black. Anyway, Osvaldez, you know, Mexican American, Artur Beterbiev, black, Josh Taylor.
Artur Beterbiev is not black.
Is white, Josh Taylor white, Ryota Murata, obviously Japanese. So the point is, Shakur Stevenson is literally the only black champion in their company. It's not a good look when they're fighting a racial discrimination lawsuit. So, you know, when the Oscar Valdez thing came up originally, it's like my initial response was completely dismissive. You know, we've seen this from Top Rank. Shakur Stevenson spent a year and a half saying he was going to fight Josh Warrington, and then, you know, that fight never happened, obviously. So it seems like one of those things in looking at the language that they've used where they say, you know, we've discussed financial terms, but nothing's agreed, or, you know, let's see if the fighters agree to the money involved. But if you look at the overall circumstances, they're put in a position where they really like, I mean, I could spend a lot of time dissecting this champions list. You know, you also have issues with fighters being old, fighters being heavily international. I mean, Shakur Stevenson is their young American up-and-coming guy, really their only guy, now that Teofimo went to, you know, Bolivian. So, you know, they're heavily incentivized to try to build him up. So, you know, to say the Oscar Valdez fight, if that was the thing originally they didn't want to do, Valdez doesn't want that fight. They're trying to maintain the relationship with the Reynoso camps. They don't want to, you know, force that fight. It suddenly looks like they're going to say, okay, we need to do everything we can to make Shakur one of or the face of our company. You know, again, saying Tyson Fury, he's a guy who's, you know, heavily involved with Daniel Kinahan and MTK. You know, he's not a purely Top Rank guy. I mean, Shakur Stevenson, they have a lot of reasons to try to make him their next guy. And if that means throwing Oscar Valdez at him and seeing, you know, if a star emerges from that fight, even if it's Valdez, and if it means again trying to build up opponents, Top Rank very aggressively moved in to get Xavier Martinez. No one thought that he was going to go to Top Rank, but his contract was up for renewal, and the report was that they offered an amount of money that the PBC and Mayweather Promotions just said that, you know, it didn't make sense for them to match. So I mean, Top Rank's out here, company that's pinching pennies everywhere, overpaid to get Xavier Martinez to try to bring blood into the 130-pound division for them. And, you know, what's the reason for that? If they're going to do the Shakur Stevenson Oscar Valdez fight, if that ends up being real, the winner of that is going to be one of the, I mean, it's weird to say that because, you know, they probably won't be able to draw $500,000 at a gate, but will be one of the biggest stars in their company, and they're going to need opponents. So whoever wins this fight, I think, is going to be well positioned, and I think the winner of the fight is going to stay at 130, at least for a year or two. You know, eventually there will be a Lomachenko fight if they want to move up. You know, we'll see what happens with the WBO there. But for that reason, there's a lot of intrigue. And again, if Conseil Sao can eke out any kind of, I mean, if Xavier Martinez can eke out any kind of win, I mean, you have a young undefeated guy, and he would presumably go straight into the winner of that fight. Assuming it, you know, they stay at 130, like I think. So, yeah. Anyway, that was my long jag for the evening. Do you have anything to say about that or anything else? Period. Or are we pretty much wrapped up here?
No, I think that's a good point. I think I would agree with most of the points you've made there, or at least like I acknowledge that those are good points that you've brought up there. I could see the perspective. And I could definitely see the route in which the Shakur and Valdez winner stays at 130 pounds. Also, if that fight doesn't actually happen, somehow falls through, and we've talked about it this much, I'm going to be pissed. Okay? But I think Shakur wants that Lomachenko fight, and I think they would be dumb not to make that fight sooner rather than later, especially when Lomachenko has seemingly erased the Teofimo loss already, remarkably. That's a fight that I think that they should do sooner rather than later. So yeah, I think their whole 130-pound situation is probably the most conclusive work Top Rank has done in a really long time. The way they've built out 130, the way they've matched these guys, they've made the signings. I think they've done a really good job there. They've completely fucked up 175, dropped the ball in several ways, put the crowning moment of that division on a Friday night, and then squandered the winner to the point where he is like not even known outside of hardcore boxing circles is kind of sad. But at the same time, I think it was a good learning experience for them. Also, it helps that they've got some pretty marketable guys at 130 in Shakur and Valdez. And I guess you could say Herring was also part of that. At least Herring's good at marketing himself. Was, by the way, I think Jamel Herring's an inactive fighter at this point. So yeah, I think, you know, it is one of the more interesting storylines with Top Rank that does not include Terrence Crawford suing them or Tyson Fury. You know, this weekend we're gonna get the
Oh, just
resolution.
one more. Say what you're gonna say first. I'll circle back at the end.
We're going to get the resolution of the Makabu Mishunu situation. Do you care about this?
Let me say the last thing. It just take 2 seconds. Another name we didn't mention was Navarrete, which again, that's
For good
another,
reason.
you know, Shakur Stevenson wins. That's another, you know, another fight they're presumably going to do at 130 is to bring him up at some point. But
You for a lot of people, you didn't add anything to this conversation. In fact, you just took away from this.
well, you know, I mean, just to like, this is the bizarre thing though. These are some of the biggest fights that Top Rank can do with their current roster, and these are the equivalent of, you know, I might make some people angry saying this, but the equivalent of just like a random Showtime main event in terms of the amount of attention they're going to draw.
I thought you were going
You
to say
know,
Boxing After Dark.
no, I mean that's not. I mean, look, by the time you have a if Shakur and Osvaldo fight each other, you know, that'll be a two fight or a two title unified champion. Shakur drew a certain amount of money in his last fight. Osvaldez has done a certain amount of radio. Like, you know, that'll be something, but not that much.
Does Conceição Martínez headline Boxing After Dark 10 years ago?
Oh, it doesn't make the broadcast.
Well, it might make the broadcast, but my point is, well, actually, I have 2 points there. Just we are in this situation. I don't mean that as an insult, by the way, guys. What I mean is that we're in this era of boxing where there's just so many platforms that these fights that are good fights that may or may not have made the broadcast 10 years ago, they now have a home, and everything in between, from bad to the really good, like there's the avenues that we have to watch boxing is just amazing to think about from where we were 10 years ago. And then the other point is like, at what point am I no longer going to be making Boxing After Dark references because most of our fans just did not, were not active viewers of boxing? Because you got to remember, boxing exploded in growth, whether you want to admit it or not, exploded in growth between 2015 and 2017, which coincides with Mayweather-Pacquiao, Mayweather-McGregor.
Well, and the rise of PBC on network television, I'll just add. But yeah, I mean, just to unpack what I said a minute ago of why I wouldn't make the broadcast, just HBO. Really, they never committed to building up divisions in the way that PBC and ESPN do,
That's how you keep kept
PBC
costs
and
down.
Top Rank do in 2022. What did you say about that?
It's how you keep costs down because if you think about it, if you build out a division like in this 130-pound situation right here, how many of these fights are actually making money? Like most of the time, there's one or two fights that you're building towards that will make money, and all the other ones will lose money. And HBO was not in the business of doing that. They said, bring us the finished product and we'll air it, and you guys go lose money building this up.
Yeah, that's what I mean. This would have been on like I'm trying to think. What channel does Top Rank used to be
Unimas.
on? Unimas. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, yeah, I mean, they top rank. I mean, it just would have been done totally differently with HBO. I mean, you know, towards the end, I mean, they weren't even broadcasting Rafael Valdez. He got pushed to top rank pay-per-view. You know, I mean,
He got pushed to Unimas.
well, they know they did a top rank pay-per-view. There was the I think
Okay.
at the time the three big guys top ranks were pushing. I think it was Zurdo, Oscar Valdez, and Diego Magdaleno. Was it Diego or was it the other the brother who headlined?
Diego. No,
Yeah,
I guess it was Jesse because
Jesse,
Diego had
Jesse,
already
Jesse. D
lost.
Diego, yeah, Diego's the older brother who had lost. Yeah, so it was Jesse Magdaleno, and they headlined a non-HBO top ranked pay-per-view at that moment in time. But yeah, I mean, HBO wasn't committed to building up divisions, so they would have broadcast probably Shakur being an Olympian, and then you would have only seen these guys when they were fighting Shakur. You would not have seen any of the development to get there. They would have just been opponents for him.
All right,
Yeah, we can move on.
we are going to get the resolution of Makabu Mishunu this weekend.
So are you expecting Canelo to be in the ring after the fight? Is that where you're going with this?
Do you care about this situation?
No, I mean I don't, why are we even talking about this? I mean, the only reason it was in the news at all was because Eddie Reynoso pulled some weird bluff where he said he wanted to fight Makabu, which,
Let's pretend that you're interested, okay?
just yeah. How about I'm not going to talk about this at all, and you can say whatever you want to
So
say.
you're going to say yes when I ask you if you're interested in this. Tom, are you interested in the resolution of Makabu Mishunu, this huge Don King promoted cruiserweight extravaganza?
Hell yes.
All right, well, I got some news for you. This fight is going to be available on Fight TV pay-per-view. Can you guess the price?
Is it going to be $20?
No.
Is it going to be $21?
It's going to be $50.
Yeah, I mean, I knew the price. I was just trying to play along, but yeah.
Isn't
And
that's fucking crazy?
are there boxing writers with affiliate links trying to push this fight who are also complaining about PBC's pay-per-views?
Yeah. I just saw that earlier on Twitter. How did you know? I was browsing Twitter and I was looking at one of the most objective journalists out there who always proclaims the ridiculous decision making of the WBA of Dan Raphael, and he's pushing this. The same Dan Raphael who changed his tune on the WBA once they hired his friend Gary Shaw. What a weird world.
Yeah, we can wrap this up, right?
That was the point.
I
I'm
feel
not
like we're
talking
gonna
about this.
ruin your
Come on
dinner.
now.
Yeah, it's like I don't have anything. Yes, it's completely ridiculous. You have the Canelo thing, you have the pay-per-view thing.
The
Yeah,
Canelo thing's not happening.
I think that's as much as we have to say about it.
Here, I'll just throw this out there. This is what happened, okay? Eddie Reynoso fell for the Don King trick, learned his lesson, no longer interested. That's all. That's how I read on my read on the situation. But
Yeah, I'll take half a second more on this. I mean, it was always, look, if you want to do a pay-per-view with Canelo, you need to have a platform that can broadcast and promote it, and you need to have someone who can pay for pay-per-view guarantees. There was never, that was never going to happen with this fight. Like, Showtime or Fox are not going to pay for Canelo to fight Makabu. Doesn't make any sense.
well,
So
they
it was just
would
a
with
bad
certain
bluff.
guarantees, and I don't think Canelo's out here willing to give out those guarantees at this
Well,
point.
I just mean, well, or the reverse, if Canelo is willing to fight, and not take a guarantee, or yeah, I mean, given just the business circumstances, that fight was never going to come together. It was just a bad bluff by Eddie Reynoso to say, yes, I have other options outside of the PBC when he does not.
I
So.
mean, just not the smartest move there. But anyway, that's been another episode here. If you like our podcast, give us a good rating, give us a good review. Go over to patreon.com/sundaypuncher. Get yourself in. You get access to our chat, which I think is invaluable in keeping yourself not only informed of what's going on, but also really just having this discussion going on all day long of whatever it is that's happening in the sport. There's also more podcasts and stuff that you can listen to. But yeah, we really appreciate you guys listening. I hope you guys enjoy the fights this weekend, and we'll be back Well, it's Monday, so we'll be back next week.
Yeah, and I'll just say thanks as always for having me on. Just one last comment to go all the way back to the beginning because I kind of shat on the days in the schedule. I will say this, and I'm being completely sincere when I say this. I at least care about the outcome of almost all of those fights. You know, those aren't all fights I'm necessarily going to be staying up late for on my dad's schedule, but yeah, there's something interesting about almost all of those fights. So, and you know, coming up here, we have a few of these top rank cards which aren't huge, but you know, again, the outcomes matter, and
Yeah, I'm just going to
I just
remove all
there's
this
such a
time.
high chance this main event is going to be questionable, but yeah, there's a lot to look forward to. This is kind of a slow weekend, but it's really going to pick up, and I'm excited about boxing in 2022. I guess that's just how I want to close off my first appearance here on the Sunday Puncher podcast for 22. Is I'm very excited about the year to come in boxing.
Well, that was very controversial, Tom. I'll have to edit that down.
I have no comeback to that. I'm ready to go out here.
All right. Thank you guys for listening.